Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Imagine growing your business and your team culture 10x in 5 years. That's exactly what my friend did, growing from $300 million in real estate sales to over $3 billion. Now imagine just how many team members you would have to hire. How the heck would you do it? Or on the other side of the table, imagine trying to stand out in today's super tough job market. What are some tips and tricks that would impress a company that is hiring dozens of people every week so that you could get your dream job? Well, that's the deep dive that we're going to take today in this job interview episode of Early to Rise Radio. And you know what? We're going to throw out all convention when it comes to getting hired and doing the hiring and see what really worked in the real world. Now, I'm going to be honest. My friend's answers were completely opposite to what I expected. And so I had to quickly adjust my questions on the fly, but I took pages of notes and my eyes were open to new opportunity. This one is so good. So you're going to learn from my friend Sharon Srivatsa, who built a company called Telus Properties, 10x, literally 10x, from $300 million in sales to $3 billion, sold it to Douglas Elliman, and my goodness, he hired a lot of people, and he's going to teach you how to do it, but also how to get hired. So listen, you'll discover how to hire assistants, how to ask and answer specific interview questions, and figure out what's the minimum that should be done in preparation for getting hired, onboarded, and built into team culture. Hi, I'm Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio, and I want you to meet my friend Sharon. Now, you've met him before in one of my earlier podcasts, and he has an amazing tale of traveling from India to America on a tennis scholarship and fighting off raccoons while dumpster diving for food in Indiana. Then he went on to work at Goldman Sachs. Then he went on to build a massive real estate company, and he's become a self-made multimillionaire in the process, and he's going to teach you his secrets today. He's going to help you get hired, avoid getting fired, and get the best people into your company if you're a business owner. Now, one last thing. Sharon is also an amazing speaker, and you're going to hear from him at the Perfect Life Retreat on November 8th and 9th in San Diego. So grab your 2-for-1 ticket deal at perfectliferetreat.com, and don't miss the bonus networking session with me. Now, Sharon's also going to be at that one, and there's going to be 350 high performers who will be there to make more money and make more time for what matters in life, and you're going to meet them all, and it's going to be a game changer for you. So let's jump into our high energy discussion that we had down in the headquarters of his new business in beautiful Newport Beach, California. All right, Sharon, my man. So when you built up Telus Properties 10X, you obviously had to hire a lot of agents, a lot of admin stuff, I'm sure. How did you get all those people?
How it all starts is, I think it starts with the root of having some kind of plan, right? What we end up doing all the time is we say, there's this expression which we say, be slow to hire, fast to fire.
Right.
Right? Like, yeah, that's insane. That's insane because
you can't be.
You can't be, right? You can't be when you're growing because you can't slow to hire, fast to fire, because what happens when you're growing a business is that you need people right now, all the time.
I need people yesterday.
Yes. And so then if you're slow to hire them, you get more and more frustrated. You can't actually build a bench around it. And then suddenly something goes wrong and then you're like fast to fire. Now in the growth mode, you've hired slow and fired fast. Well, it sounds good and a nice way to say like a phrasing, it crushes your business.
Interesting.
Right. And so the biggest thing that I would say, the first one is there needs to be some kind of guiding force on how you're hiring and what the hiring needs to be. So if that means, hey, so we had a very, very simple formula. We need to get to 600 agents doing X amount of business in a 5-year period, which meant that every month we needed to hire X amount of people. Mm-hmm. To hire those X amount of people, we knew that for every 10 people we spoke to, we made 2 offers.
Okay.
So if I was not, so if I needed to hire 10 people that month, I'm going to have 100 conversations.
Right.
100 conversations is 25 conversations a week. So I need to fill my pipeline with conversation. So all we focused on was how do we get that first initial conversation?
So you have to even back it out to if I need to have 100 conversations, then I need to look at X number of resumes too?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
The one thing that we focused on was as soon as we figured out how many conversations we needed to have, then it became several of our hiring managers and sales managers figuring out what they needed to do on a daily basis to generate those conversations.
See, these are the machines that you build. Yeah. Sharon and I were just having a conversation before about what he's the best in the world at, and it's backing out, like building the machine of hiring people, building the machine of the business, of the perfect scripting and all this stuff. So this is amazing. So how did you also get the right leaders in place? Because you would have had to have maybe 10x the leadership and the management. So how do you get those types of places in to manage the agents?
Yeah, we should come back to how we, the mechanics of actually finding the lead, having the conversation, et cetera. But the sales leaders who are actually hiring these people, and we can talk about kind of operations, back office people, because a lot of times we need that. But let's talk about front of the house salespeople that you're hiring. Good process drives good results, right? Good process drives good results.
Yeah.
It is very, very hard for us. So if you are hiring for your organization, you can walk in just because you're the CEO, you can walk in and you know that, hey, Sharon's the right fit or not the right fit. You know right away.
Okay.
Right? Because you have a sense of this vision that you have in your mind. You know where I may fit in the vision. It's just a very natural thing for you.
Well, I would say that, but I mean, I've known so many people that thought that and got burned,
totally.
Burned bad.
Certainly. So I think that's why you set up the process where the process is, what we talked about was we want to get the feel good fit right away. So we know that we're not hiring, this is a PG show, we know we're not hiring jerks.
Yeah.
Right? So if a sales leader was going to get a candidate in front of me, the only question I'm going to ask them is are they a DNA fit? And my sales leader may say, hey, I spoke to Craig. He seemed really pleasant on the phone. And he seemed really pleasant in email communication. All his qualifications check out. He fits the mold. He qualifies to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big, just because they qualify on their resume doesn't mean that they qualify to come into an interview. I think the check, what we're checking, we're not checking the resume. We're just checking, is this person a nice person? Do they fit the culture of the organization?
Yeah, good
right?
cultural fit, right?
Yeah, and that's a very short interview. We tell people, hey, I only want to talk to you for 5 minutes because what that does, I only want to talk to you for 5 minutes. And so now in the first 5 minutes of the impression that I have is not going to change in the next 25 because my client is not giving that person more than 5 minutes in the first 5 minutes to create that culture bond. So I want that same interaction, right? So my sales leaders, when they call agents or when they go, they have 5 minutes. Hey, I want to do a quick 5 minute call. And they just chit chat for 5 minutes. They ask a couple of questions. If they don't feel that DNA fit, we're not interviewing them. They're not one of the 10 that we want to talk to that day. And that's hard sometimes, even though they're a big name in this industry, they have the right qualifications, but it's not the right fit for us.
Okay.
And that gets hard sometimes.
What would someone say in those 5 minutes on the call?
The easiest, like one of my favorite questions that I ask both live on the call and on when I meet with them is, hey, Craig, thank you so much for taking the time to make this call. I asked this question of everybody, and this is not a trick question. How did you prepare for this call?
Interesting.
That's it, right? That's it. And this is not a trick question. I just want them to think, hey, Sharon, I knew I was going to talk to you. I Googled you. It looks like you did this. Looks like you did that. I love TELUS. I just want to know if at that point they can articulate two things. Can they say they did some form of prep? Because I respect that prep. And can they handle that question in a cordial, polite, and respectful way? If they do those two things, they can handle almost anything. That's it. It's just one question.
Hey, I got a question for you. Personal question for my ego here. If, let's say I know a guy who had a book and he has a business and somebody comes in for an interview and they haven't read his book, how should he take that? What if they don't even know he has a book?
So that's not okay.
Yeah.
Right. That's not okay. So if I'm meeting with you and I schedule an interview.
Well, that guy that we know.
Right. That guy. So that most disciplined man in the world. Right.
He might be.
So let's take you, right? If I was meeting with you and I came in not knowing you had a book, well, that's just not fair.
Right.
But if I haven't read it, but I read the three blog posts that you wrote, that's okay. At least I should get some sense of what it is. Maybe I should look at the Amazon reviews. Maybe I should read the back cover. Mm-hmm. I should at least know the thesis and the theme that you bring as a person to the world. That's all this is, right? Yeah. That's the first 10 minutes of hiring. It's just, can I connect with you and can I work with you on a day-to-day basis? That's all it is, because everything else you can do here.
Yeah.
Like, I can teach you the skills and the capabilities, but I can't. Connection is connection.
What about the other way around? What should I know? What extra work should I have done in this situation to know about the interviewee?
So it's unfair. It is very unfair for the interviewer to walk into an appointment without even having just two things. Read the resume, Google the person. That's it.
Got it.
Right? That's a 2 minute, just skim. Like, you can't, whenever I walk into a interview, it's unfair for me to say, walk me through your resume. Like, that's just not fair.
Sure.
Because I did that once.
Yeah.
And when I was at Goldman, and the guy on the other side said to me, he goes, I'm sorry, I researched you and I did this research and I just want to know, like, did you read my resume? No offense. Because I want to know how in depth you want me to go. And I was really great, right?
Yeah.
He called me out and not even having read his resume.
Yeah.
And from that day, I was like, there's no way this is going to ever happen again. I'm at least going to know the chronological order and maybe try and find a point of connectivity. Hey, you live in Columbia, South Carolina. My best friend's from Columbia, South Carolina. Where did you live? At least it creates some bond.
Sure.
And then, like, one Google phrase, I'm like, you know, I have no idea who this person is. We Googled this person and they had a record.
Whoa.
Right? And they didn't submit an application. And I said, hey, I actually said, hey,
Craig. They didn't put that on the resume?
but I think that just two things. A lot of times we say you have to do this 10-step process. No, read the resume, yeah. Google the person, take the call.
Maybe go on LinkedIn.
That would be great, right?
Yeah. Okay, what other big mistakes do the interviewers make go wrong when hiring for any role?
So I believe it's very, very difficult mm-hmm. to interview a person and have them fit into your organization and have them produce in the fastest possible way from just an interview process.
Yeah, okay.
So my suggestion is always there's three steps to this process and how we think about it. Number one is, are they a DNA fit? Are they cool? Can we connect with them from our first interaction? Great, bring them in for an interview. When we bring them in for an interview, we're just talking about, it's a very free flow conversation, but we put a time limit on it. It's 20 minutes. I just want to get to know you. The end of that is not whether you're going to hire them or not.
Mm-hmm.
The end of that is just trying to figure out whether you're going to invite them to work with you for a day.
Oh, that's interesting.
Bring them in. Bring your laptop. Come in. I will pay you, Craig, for a day. I will pay you at X rate. I will pay you for a day. Take a day off of your current job. I will pay you to come work with our team. You come work with our team 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. that day. Use your resources. Use the laptop. If someone's going to give you an email to write, call your friend to write the email. Like, work like you're working here for a full day. Go to lunch with the team. Like, do the work. I have no idea how someone's going to work. I have no idea what emails they're going to write. I have no idea how resourceful they are. Because if you hired me to work with you and you wanted me to, like, set up an event for you, me and Bianca were setting up an event for you, I'd be like, hey, I know these six people that can set up events. You would never smoke that out in an interview. Right. But now I can bring my relationships to bear and you see that on a live basis. So my biggest way of interviewing people is to get people to come in and work for a day, and we'll pay you to work for that day. And now the team gets buy-in because they've already worked with you that day or it didn't work.
Right. So when that happens, like, what would you say the percent of people work out for you?
It's like 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah. You know right away whether they're going to fit with the agenda or not. You know right away how fast they are in the response. You know whether they can handle chat. You know their tone. You know how they communicate. You know whether they're open to sharing ideas. You know whether they're going to get pushed back, whether or not. You just know that stuff very quickly, right? In the interview setting, however good you are, I think it's too expensive then to go hire somebody, give them a 30, 60, 90-day, you know, kind of notice period. Like, that's so messy.
Okay. All right. So let's go all the way back to the start. How do you cast that really wide net for getting lots of applications? If you want to have 100 conversations in a month to get those 10 people, what do you need to do in order to get to the 100 conversations? How do you get like 1,000 resumes or something like that?
Yeah, so I think there is three ways to do it. Number one, everyone should be using some kind of job site, right? And the job site's super important. And so Indeed.com, whatever the jobs.com job sites. Yeah. The second is, for some reason, Craigslist is really popular. So we always post on Craigslist. Yeah. And the third is, there's no reason your first post shouldn't be on your social networks, Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever. But where you link them to is super important. Everyone says, here's the job profile. We're hiring a social media coordinator, this many years experience, blah, blah, blah. Apply here with your resume. Well, that's fine. But how do you take that to the next level, right? Then I'm surfing. I click apply on all the jobs.
Sure.
And that's not good enough. So you say, hey, apply here with your resume. Send us a link to your portfolio and find the one typo in this ad.
Huh.
Based on that, right? And so we've also done where we said, look at our website and make one recommendation and add it to your resume. So now we have 100 people that actually submit resumes, and we have 100 recommendations on how we can make our website better.
Right.
So you don't even have to. And so now I can just use. So when we did that for our summer intern, which was amazing. Like 27, 28 applications came in.
For Kingston Lane?
For TELUS when we did that. 27, 28 applications came in, and we had a research position just to do analytics and data. And the that position was going to turn into a full-time position.
Yeah.
And we said, look at our website, look at these market reports that we do, and make one suggestion on how you'd make these market reports better. We have 27 applications came in, 27 suggestions. When we hired the person that came in, I handed him the 27 suggestions and say, this is your first 3 months.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
And so now we crowdsourced all the ideas, and he now had the ownership to go deliver those ideas. So in his first 90 days, he created more new stuff for us than we've ever done in the last 4 years. So it injects so much new stuff. And I use that in, so if it's a detail-oriented job, like a financial analyst, transaction coordinator, then you say, find the typo in this, because now you know that you're looking for the detail-orientedness in the post.
Yeah.
If not, you get them to do something else that's actually,
jump through some kind of
hoop. Something, but it needs to be not more than 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And the person who goes above and beyond on that, you know right away that, they're setting themselves apart, which those are the people you interview first.
Yeah, absolutely. Where'd you get the idea for the send one suggestion in?
I saw it somewhere. It's not mine. Oh, yeah. Have you heard of this somewhere else?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's great. But I know a lot of people that instead of going through the entire interview process, they'll just be like, hey, I'm going to hire you as a consultant for a couple of days.
Let's see
how this works out.
I love it.
Yeah. Fast track it that way, right?
The hire slow, fire fast in our world today is we are being irresponsible. We're not supporting the growth that we have. We could do so much better because with the consultant model, because we have Upwork or whatever. We have so many resources where we can get people to solve the interim need, and then maybe they turn into a full-time position, maybe not. Maybe they finish the position and turn into a process that they can handle the full-time position. But we can't wait to hire somebody while we're bursting at the seams. This is not okay.
Right. So let's walk this through for like a Fit Body Bootcamp location.
Right.
All right. I need 3 trainers. Oh my gosh. You can't use the hire slow, fire fast. We've got workouts tomorrow.
Right.
So you go through the same process. You have that 5-minute call. Maybe you do like a 20-minute in person. And then from there you say, hey, you're going to come and you're going to shadow our top trainer. And let's see how this day goes. And then, we'll pay you for the day and you take the day off work and let's see how it goes and
awesome.
Then decide at the end.
Yeah, awesome.
Got it.
Because now in one day you've seen their entire process. They're committed to your organization. They see culture. And it becomes a two-way conversation, right? Now they're like, wow, I'm actually committed to this process because I'm invested in this process.
Sure.
I'll tell you this. I was talking to my wife about this. I remember this conversation. So it was interview. I had 39 one-on-one interviews with Goldman Sachs during the process,
right? When you were getting hired at Goldman Sachs.
When I was getting hired at Goldman Sachs. And after interview 31, my then fiance, now wife, told me, she goes, 31 interviews. Like, are you done? You should just walk. And I go, no, I'm like so invested in this process right now.
Right. The opportunity cost. Yeah. Look at all I've sunk into this.
And I was like, it's a matter of, I actually feel more connected to this company than I do anyone else because I've talked to so many people here. And in the reverse psychology way, they just made me not want it more, but they made me connect it during the process.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. So if we bring somebody in and they work with you for a day and they're actually out shopping 2 other jobs, you win. Even with a good candidate, you win because you brought that person in, they committed the time, And you win because now you have the team that can support that.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about going to your network, starting with your network first with Facebook and stuff. What were you doing and what should people, business owners, be doing to get referrals, you know, asking their clients or something like that, or their current employees or team members? Like, hey, we have this position. Do you guys know anyone? Or also just going through your general network.
Yeah, so the two things that people miss out a lot on is I think there's an opportunity to do the to have some kind of referral bonus on the team,
yeah,
on your internal team. And I don't think that needs to be a lot. It can be a $100 Amex card or whatever, right? Uh-huh. Any switch in reward just makes it top of mind for people. So if you say, hey, we're that's why good process drives good results. Let's say we have an analyst position that you're launching a Fit Body Bootcamp, for example. Mm. The first launch is in your all hands on Wednesday. Hey, we're launching this position for a week. We're only giving it to internal folks so that you guys can get your candidates in. And for anybody that refers one that we hire, you get, you know, $300, whatever, right? After that, we say the next week is, hey, I'm going to post it on my network, there's a two-way post on this. Kingston Lane is growing again.
Yeah.
That's what you're promoting, right? Kingston Lane is growing again. We want to continue serving our teams and our clients. We have this one position open. Click here to look at it. It's right on our website. And we'd love to get our friends and family connected who want to apply for this position.
Right.
So now you're like, oh my gosh. So even if no one applies, you create a social or a social proof that your company is growing. That's a very, very powerful thing. And I don't think, instead of just saying, hey, know anyone who wants to apply for this role? That's not it. Like, start with my company is growing again. I think that's a huge, huge deal.
What do you think? I think you're bringing up a great point here. So what do you think that most business owners miss out on in terms of when the fact is that they have to sell the person on working for them too? Because it's a competitive job market right now.
Right.
And you mentioned before, like when someone spends a day with you and if they're job shopping, which I'd never actually heard that before, but if they're job shopping and you spend a day, you invest that day, then they're going to more likely to be picking you. And then you mentioned in the ad, you have to, you know, hey, got to get people excited. What are other things that business owners can do to start persuading people to want to work for them and sell the job to other people?
So great, great question. So, the days of putting up a job description on a website and asking people to apply in our world, in the high achiever world of people watching on the stream, are over.
Yeah.
The job description said when someone links to it, the first thing should be a video. Hey, my name is Sharon Srivatsa. I'm the CEO of Kingston Lane, and I want to invite you to the ultimate digital platform that we're building for real estate agents. And I want you to be a part of this team because you get X, Y, Z, A, B, C. And Let me give you an example. Craig joined us and he lives half the year in Mongolia and half the year in Siena. He works this schedule. Have you ever considered that? Or maybe you live right in Laguna Beach. Like, you were telling the story of the company, right?
Yeah.
If I saw that and then I saw the job description, my frame is completely different as opposed to just reading what the company is. But I'll tell you this, every person right now that is applying for a job, they're applying for at least three more.
Right.
So
at least
you are not the only application, and it's totally okay to ask them if they're working with other, you know, looking at other companies, and the right candidate will say, yes, I'm keeping my options open. That's okay. But we are in a good candidates are very, very tight, very, very hard to find right now. And they may not move just for the change, you know, kind of the lateral move in comp, mm-hmm. but they will move for the uptick in culture. They will move the uptick in benefits. They'll move the uptick in time and control of their schedules.
That's right. Yeah. Like the uptick in commute.
Exactly. Right. And so, but if I know that all things being equal, if I have a mediocre CEO or a high energy CEO, I might as well switch and work for the high energy CEO straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't we position ourselves as, hey, I bring more confidence and more swagger to the table, which makes it very interesting very quickly.
How do you have differences between, or what are the differences in the process between hiring an assistant versus hiring an executive? Is there anything different in what you've outlined so far?
So let's answer both those questions, right?
Sure.
If I remember I didn't have an assistant for a while.
Yeah.
And
when you were running TELUS?
When I was running TELUS in the early days, I was doing everything myself just because I was hyper-controlling on my calendar and my schedules and all that. Not because I didn't need the help, just because I thought I had it and no one could actually support me.
Sure.
when my chief operating officer came on, he says, Sean, this is insane. There's no way you are actually doing the organization a disservice by doing the things that are not your highest and best use, that are not in your zone of genius. And so I confided in him. I was like, I can't go. I have no idea how to go hire an assistant or who could do the right fit for me. That's when I learned where he said, Sean, it's not your job to hire the assistant. It's mine as the COO. He went, hired the assistant.
Yeah.
He went, trained the assistant, and he handed me the assistant.
Got it.
Well, now I had a completely different view of this role, right?
Right.
So a lot of entrepreneurs who are the first thing a solopreneur should add to their business is a VA or an assistant.
Yeah.
But the most painful part about that is you feel like you're giving away the personal mechanics of how you built this business. You're giving that away. And you think, and we think that training that person is going to be a lot harder than just doing it ourselves.
Right. Why would I invest 10 hours to train somebody when I could just do 10 minutes a day of doing this? But it adds up over time.
It totally adds up. And I think that belief system needs to get changed. That didn't change for me until my COO said, let me do it for you.
Yeah.
But when I had my assistant, oh my gosh, it's a game changer. But so having the right person hire for the right role is really, really important. So
did they do the 5-minute phone call, the 20-minute interview, and then the spend a day and let's see if I can train you up sort of thing?
So I don't know what he did. All I got was he said, hey, I've vetted these candidates. They have already talked to the key right-hand members of your team already. So this person already interfaces well with them.
Yeah.
You have the buy-in from the team. That's done. You just need to figure out if you have personal connection with this person. So he brought in three candidates. I was like, oh, Liz is great. And we hired Liz.
Got it.
So I let him run a process, but he ran a process.
Yeah.
And I think the hard part is just outlining that process up front is super, super important. It's not the one interview and hire. Like, that just does not work.
Right, exactly. Even multiple interviews, it seems like this interview, this podcast interview has gone down such a different track than I expected.
I'm sorry. Because,
in a good way, because it totally has flipped my mind about how we hire people. Like, we do a phone screen, we do a first interview, we do a second interview. And I was going to ask you, like, how should the environment change in the second interview? You know, how would there be different people in the second interview? But you kind of thrown that all out the window with this different approach to doing it, right?
At the end of the day, we want people, good people in a good system will get good results.
Yeah.
Right? And so our job is to figure out, are these good people for us?
Yeah.
Okay, do they fit in our system? Let me bring it in the system. Does the system buy into this good person? Great. The system will take care of this person's capabilities, their growth, and their results. We want to just let the system win, so the system carries the good person through the process.
Right. And essentially, like, it's not going to be 100% perfect, but neither is any interviewing process, right?
Exactly right.
But this one, you feel like you get the most tangible, it's fastest, you get the most tangible, you get someone right in the fire really quickly.
Totally. The other thing we've also found is we want to interview folks that in the same medium in which they will be communicating with clients.
Okay.
So if you're interviewing a support person and their job is to run support on email all day long, like, we should interview them on email a lot.
Okay.
Like, if instead of doing the call, we just, let's do a bunch of email. I want to see how this person communicates. Why should we interview a support person live? That makes no sense when their entire job is to be on the computer. But if a person's job is to do video all day long, I only want you to shoot videos. I only want to do Zoom calls. I only want to see you on camera. Like, I want you to win and show me what you can do in the medium in which you communicate the most.
Right.
And otherwise, like, when you have medium mismatch is when we start to break down. So we have somebody emailing really well and they show up, they have no interpersonal skills and the entire job is being interpersonal, that starts to break completely.
Would you actually go on a showing with a real estate agent if you were hiring somebody?
No, but I would check. So for example, if I was going to hire an agent and I was unsure and they had an open house, I would go visit their open house to see how they did it,
Would you mystery shop it, or would you go known?
I would go known. Okay. Because I would go known. I would walk around. I would see what they're doing. I would see how they're handling people, because you're seeing them in their office live, right? And
in their natural habitat.
Exactly right. But if an agent cannot control their open house.
Yeah.
Or they can't control the signage they put in their yard. If they can't that's a reflection. How you do one thing is how you do everything, right? If that's a reflection of them. But I look for it in two ways. If they're not doing well at all, I look at it as, okay, is this a – just not have the awareness, and can I give them the capabilities that could completely lift their game? That's a great opportunity for me, because I can say, hey, Craig, can I show you three ways in which you can generate so much more traffic to this open house that will double your conversion? You're like, oh, wait, what? How do I do that? That's just an awareness issue.
Yeah.
But if it's a – if they're just doing it poorly because they've been in the business 20 years and they're unwilling to change, well, that's not an agent that I want.
Yeah.
So there's what's the opportunity here as well, right?
Okay. So back, you walked us through how an assistant was hired for you. And we've kind of talked about how you'd get a lot of people into your office, but what about like at a high level executive? You wouldn't do the 5-minute phone call, 20-minute thing, and then a day with you. What would you do?
So the executives are hard. I would say, this will give you super full transparency as to how we hired our COO.
Sure.
And I think that's a really great process. And we ran a process to hire our COO. We did ads, et cetera. We did these bunch of these phone screens.
Recruiter? Headhunter?
We did Headhunter.
Yeah.
But we got nothing. Like, we got nothing we liked.
Okay.
How we hired it, and I one random day, I got an email from a mentor saying, hey, I have a perfect candidate for you. He's a professional COO. He's run several businesses for growth. You and he will get along great. You should at least meet with him. I don't know what your needs are. So I met with him.
Did your mentor even know that you're looking for a COO?
Uh-uh.
Okay. So it's just a cold, random.
And you, there's a good lesson there. Like you want to keep meeting with as many people as possible. You want to fill your pipeline because you never know when you're going to need somebody. Right.
Yeah.
And so I met with him.
Well, why didn't you go to your mentor in the first place? Like, why didn't you just like,
I should have.
Yeah.
And so I thought running a process would be better.
Right.
Right. And so I never
didn't tap the network.
I didn't tap the network at all. For high level people, there's a good chance that they're not on the market.
Right.
There's a good chance. So that's the presupposition here, right? The fastest way to get to high level people is through other high level people and mentors. That is the fastest way.
Mm.
Right. And so my first lesson is I should have talked to my mentor first and a high level person. So my COO came in, we had a great conversation. It was a great fit. He talked to everybody in the executive team and we said, hey, we have no idea how this is going to work. You're a central part of this company and you know that, we know that, but what if this doesn't work out? So we said 90 days.
Yeah.
We're going to pick a title, general manager or something like that, so it doesn't disrupt the organization. You have full access to everything. Here are the goals. At the end of 90 days, you're going to provide us 10 recommendations and insights that you learned. If we feel it's a good fit then, we flip your title. Here's the offer letter that happens then, and we move on. If it doesn't work, no problem. We walk away.
What did you do before you got to this point? How many times did you meet? You know, you had dinner with them?
So I probably had 5 or 6 meetings, meetings, sharing, you know, doing the NDA, sharing the company stats, seeing what he thought, and making sure he met the key core group that was running the company.
What was it, all conversations?
So it was all conversation.
It was not interviews. It was all conversation.
It was all conversation. And we shared the CEO role. See, a CEO role for a multi-billion dollar business is a tough role. You cannot interview that person without sharing data. Saying, hey, here's who we are, here are our goals, here's where we're struggling, what would you do? And then you have conversations around it, right? My CEO that we found at TELUS is our CEO at Kingston Lane, and he's going to be my partner and CEO until he doesn't want to be. He's just, it's a perfect fit for me. But the 90 days of giving that person full access, you can't do it in a lot of organizations. Like you can bring a CEO on. It's hard to bring a CEO on for 90 days and say this is a this may or may not work.
Right. How did you convince him to do that? Because that's a huge leap for them, right?
Yeah. It just worked that he was open to doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think he...
Starting with, it was a warm leap from a mentor and he met you. You guys got along well.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was all that culture fit. And then it's like, hey, we'll figure out a way to make this work.
Right. Yeah. But if there's no way to do that, I think we put controls in place that say, hey, we're going to do a 90-day review, a 6-month review, a 1-year review.
Mm-hmm.
And during these benchmarks, we're going to hit these milestones.
Okay.
Can we agree on those milestones?
Yeah.
If we do that, then if you're not going to get an amazing partner like I have now, and someone was leaving a great career to come and invest in you, the least that they should be, you know, have alignment on is some certain set of milestones.
Okay, so let's flip it to where you were being interviewed by Goldman Sachs for 39 times in order to, you know, get that job. You got interviewed by a lot of people. Obviously, they took a very different approach than you did with the new business. And then also you hear about other companies and, you know, I read lots of interviews by CEOs about how they do it. And they talk about making sure to take somebody out to dinner and that sort of stuff. So for people who are like, maybe I'm not 100% sure about doing it Sharon's way, and, you know, they have their own ways of doing it. What are some important things to recommend in terms of how many different people interview the candidate and how many different locations and environments should you use?
Yeah, I would flip it. So the people are more important. Whoever this candidate is going to be working with on a day-to-day basis has to support the hiring of the candidate. If not, you just don't have buy-in.
Right.
And so if they're working on an operations team and they're going to be interfacing with that operations team for 80% of the time, if the operations team is not involved, it feels like Sharon went and hired somebody and thrust them onto us. We don't – I think that's just super unfair. You want the team. You want the system to support the person. So
you probably want them to feel like they hired the person.
100%. Yeah. Right?
And okay. So that's leadership versus being a boss. Hey, here you go. You got a new person.
Totally. And so what we do, like right now when we're at Kingsley, when we're hiring someone for engineering, we let engineering run the process. They come to us with the final two candidates. And then business kind of weighs in on it because 80% of the time their work and all I'm doing at that point is a culture interview.
Got it.
And I'm not they've come in and said this person qualifies, this person's met with the team, this person has the right skill sets, right capabilities. We think he or she's a good fit. Here are two candidates. What do you think? And the only thing I can say at that point is, hey, I don't think this person's the right cultural fit for these reasons. Let's put them on to a few more things in the process to vet it out. Sometimes you just don't connect, and that's okay.
And is that after they've come in and spent the day?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right, so tell us more about, first of all, you worked at Goldman's for a while. You went and got your MBA, then Goldman's was one of your first jobs out of that, right?
Yep.
And you were interviewed 39 times. Now, we've mentioned this a couple of times. Now, people are probably wondering, what the heck does that look? How do you get interviewed by 39 times? So walk us through that quickly. And then what were the biggest lessons that you took from that to then create your own processes?
So it was amazing because the only way to get in this program at Goldman Sachs was post-MBA, after the MBA program.
Okay.
And everyone knew that it would take – at least double-digit interviews. I had never met anyone who had 39.
Sure.
And it was during the time when the financial crisis was starting to happen. So I think they were more sensitive to the hiring process. And so I did interviews in Atlanta, in New York, in San Francisco, and in Chicago.
You're doing this all on your own dime?
They paid for travel.
Okay.
So they would say, hey, Sharon, we have 8 interviews set up for you in our Chicago office. It's Monday. You're going to get there Sunday night, and you're going to be there all day Monday. We're going to fly you back, but here's your schedule and here's your point person. So I would just show up and I would go interview.
Okay. So you're doing 39 interviews, but sometimes you're doing 8 in a day.
Correct. I probably 6 or 7 were my most in a day. It's very tiring.
Yeah.
The process was handled very well. Like they set it up very well and they got me wherever I needed to go.
Yeah.
But I had no guidance around who I was meeting, what the expectations were. Someone would walk in, they'd be managing partner. Someone would walk in, they'd be an analyst. I had no idea. But it was a 100% consensus vote. So if even one person said no, they wouldn't hire you.
So you would go to Chicago and you had to get through all 8 and get 100%. Then you go to Atlanta and you have to go through all 6 or 8 and you have to get 100%. Interesting.
Yeah. There were a couple of things that happened there. Some interviews were based on personality. They were very conversational. So I would ask, it was me asking questions. Tell me about how you got in the business. And that's how some people were. The other people were just jerks to me to see how I would react. Like I got this question, I share this all the time, which is, hey, Sharon, give me the best piece of advice you ever received and tie that to the performance of the equity markets. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like there's so two disjointed concepts, but all they wanted to do was my ability, even if I could answer them in a disjointed way without freaking out, right? But I'm so far into the process, I'd be like, oh, the best piece of advice I've ever received is that, you know, we always want a bigger and better future. That's essentially what we're doing for our clients, right? Equity markets over the time have performed in a certain way and we've always seen a bigger and better performance.
Yeah.
So we always want to get exposure and stay in the markets.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just made that up on the spot, but that's like if you could start doing that with verbal dexterity,
yeah,
you start to feel the confidence.
Okay, so it's just a whole bunch of different people getting different viewpoints, giving 100%, and it ended up being very similar to the process that you put in, which right. is you're going to bring them in. Right. If anybody says there's no way this person's a cultural fit, they wouldn't get the opportunity.
Totally.
Okay, great. So what are some deal breakers in your business? What do you think deal breakers are in almost any interview that people who are going to be interviewed should keep in mind?
So the first thing is, regardless of the interview, regardless of the time, regardless of the position, there's an expectation that you show up dressed the part, not for the job that you want, but dress the part every time. There is no reason to not be business professional in every interview, even if it's a technology company.
Yeah.
Right? You just show up. They tell you to take off your tie, it's okay. But if they say, hey, you're too dressed up for this, you're like, hey, I'm only dressed up because I want to be respectful of the process. That's the line, right?
Yeah.
If they tell you that you're overdressed, the answer is, I just want to be respectful towards the process. If someone told me that, like, they're instantly in my book because they did not assume anything. They showed that because of the respect for the interviewer that they came in. So that's number one. Like, we cannot walk in sloppy in an interview anyway. And you'd be shocked, like, how many we have seen, right?
Sure.
Number two. We actually had somebody interview and they actually said that they stole clients from their last employer. It was insane. Like, don't talk about illegal stuff that you did. Like, that's weird, right? That's weird. Don't do that, right?
Yeah.
Number three, if the everyone waits for the interviewer to say, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah.
The do you have any questions for me question should never come up.
Right.
Right. Because that means that you've been completely reactive to the process. And so if you can intersperse questions that you have done research on throughout the process, that just means you've just been a, you know, sit back and answer questions kind of interviewer, which that's not a team member that people want these days. So if you get asked the question, do you have any questions for me? You should be like, yes, I do. And if you don't pull out a notepad and have like all, he's like, I have 22. Do you have enough time? Like there is nothing short of that, right?
Right.
Not I have two and tell me about your culture. Like that doesn't work.
Right.
So having and if you said, do you have any questions for me? And you pull up the 22, you know, pieces of questions and you say, actually, I have 22 questions. We addressed 17 of them. I have four more. Do we still have 10 minutes to answer my four questions?
Wow.
If you did that, I can be like, okay, great. He actually asked me these questions. We had a good interview, so we got progress, and they're still unanswered questions. I like this person, right? That's really powerful. I'll tell you the one thing every single time that blows my mind when someone walks in and does this. One thing, and I think we all should do this. If you're listening and you have an interview coming up and you did this, you will blow this person away every time.
Oh, in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Walk in and show them either something that you've built or something that you have done before, like on a portfolio, as long as it's not proprietary information,
yeah,
right? And you may take something that you've done, say you've built a funnel for somebody. You may take away the blank out the names and say, Craig, I know I'm coming in here for an internet marketing position. I'm really, really proud of it. Can I show you something that I did? And I want to see if something like this actually applies to your organization. And you'll be like, oh, show me. Then I walk you through the funnel process. I say, oh, when I did this, we ran these tests. I struggled. We actually lost $4,000, but I stayed up. I ran 92 beta tests and I figured this out and we actually got to the break even and we did this and we did that. And you're showing me the process. You're essentially telling me, hey, here's my strength. Here's my weakness. Here's what I screwed up. Here's what I learned. You're showing me everything. You're actually doing the magic words, which is let me show you.
Yeah.
Imagine that interview compared to you asking me questions of tell me a time when.
How many times does that happen? Is it like a 1% thing?
Two times. Two times in the last, I don't know, 300 interviews.
Oh, okay. So two out of 300. So about 1%. Any other I can't believe this is really happening moments just for to lighten the atmosphere here? Anybody ever start eating in an interview? Or?
No, I had this one guy that never told me that he has that he had low blood sugar and he started to start to pass out. So I had to go get him some Skittles.
Okay.
But I was really scared on that one. But the goal for me is I try to keep them, you know, in in their zone. I've seen people cry a lot of times because I'll ask them about their goals. Like my favorite thing is to say, hey, what are your goals for 2018 that you're able to share?
Yeah.
And they'll say, well, I want to do better with my health. I'm like, are you able to share more about that? Oh, is that why you're moving? So you actually coach them to the job and they feel like, oh my gosh, my personal aspirations are tying into my professional aspirations. This is really good. Because the average employer doesn't talk to anybody about their personal aspirations.
Got it.
But when people cry, it kind of gets, that's tough.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm unhirable. Where would I screw up this entire process? You know, I'm applying for a job at like Kingston Lane. Where would I even make it through the first 5 minutes? Or they'd be like, nah, this guy's up.
No, you would, because the good process drives good results, right? Like as soon as we make the cultural fit and you come in for the day, you meet the team that is going to support you in your success. The team's like, oh, I really like Craig. And then you spend a day together. And then as soon as you spend a day together, you're like, okay, his magic just came out because of how talented he is. Craig is awesome. And then that the team already supports you in the process. My biggest win is get good people, need a good system to deliver good results. Okay. How can we get the good people into a good system? The entire job is not to saying, do I hire this person? The entire job is just saying, can this person move on to the next step of the process? Because the process will always take care of it.
Okay. So good people, good system. That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
This is simple as can be. Yeah. Are there any other big fails across these times where that you could, you know, warn people about, like, hey, you know, make sure you don't do this or something like that, as somebody listening who's going for a job would do, like, even in like, because most companies aren't interviewing like you. So think about the people that are going for the first or second interview. Maybe like in our business, it was a 30-minute phone call, screening, then first interview, then second interview.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give somebody to make sure they don't make any big mistakes?
I would treat the interview process, which is really, as romance.
Okay.
So if I'm an interviewer, and if I would treat it just like I was going on a date.
Yeah.
I would confirm the date the day. It's a very simple step. I would confirm the date the day before. I would show up prepared and, you know, ready. When finishing the day, I would follow up saying, I enjoyed it. What can I do? When do you want to get together again? And the goal is what? To end up having a relationship with this person.
Yeah.
I think of a interviewee as, hey, I'm going on a date. If I have to go on a date, I have to clear up my schedule. I got to make sure I'm ready and make sure I'll, if you can manage it like a date, you're not, if you didn't like the process, you're not going to call the person back and they're not going to call you back. But if you actually want to, you goal for us is to bring some romance into the process. And that's how you think about it. And I think that injects some kindness and some hustle into the process as well, because it's 50% kindness, 50% hustle, right? You want them, but you also want to hustle to show that you want it. And the easiest way is to figure out, if I was going on a date, is this how I would behave? And then just manage process like that.
Okay. So you got to the point where it's like, okay, the person came in, they did the one day, it was really great. Now you're like, okay, this is the person we're going to hire. What do you have for your onboarding process? And then also, do you have that, hey, and this is our 90-day window sort of thing?
Totally. I think it's unfair to bring someone on without a 30, 60, 90 plan.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as, there are two parts to that. Craig, in these 30, 60, 90 days, our goal is for you to hit this level of capabilities. And our commitment is to do these things, meaning for you to know the culture of the firm, you're going to talk to Sharon 3 times a week for the next 10 weeks. But if I just say you're going to learn the culture of the firm, but I don't put my accountability in there, that's not fair to that person. Uh-huh. So now at the end of these 90 days, I can say, yes, I did 30 minutes a week for 10 weeks with you. Do you feel better about this? And so the 30, 60, 90 plan is super important, but everyone does the 30, 60, 90 plan as to what just the interviewee or the new candidate is supposed to do.
Okay.
I think there's a column that says, what is the company responsible for to support that person in getting there? And I think that is the most important thing, because then you've helped this person. Because now when I go home at the end of 1 week and I feel like, wow, I don't know if I'm doing well or not, but I'm getting the support. That's really good.
Yeah.
You know, the 1-2 week mark for a person saying, how am I doing in my role, is very, very sensitive, because the other two jobs that they shopped are still calling them.
Okay.
And so, yes, they accept another position, but if I want somebody and they got another gig, I'm calling them on the 1st week mark and the 2nd week mark. Cause I'm telling you, I know that if that employer doesn't take care of them in the first 10 days and the first 20 days, like, I can get them.
Got it. Because they might have buyer's
remorse. Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Right. But that, I think that comes down to them feeling like they're supported by the company, not just given a bunch of things to do.
Okay. And then flip it around. What do you still have that fire fast approach? Like, it's like, okay, this really is not working out. We're going to stop dating and and go?
So there's an amazing quote that one of my friends told me: bad news doesn't get better with time.
Right.
Right. And it's just, you just have to figure it out. Bad news doesn't get better with time. Just declare it. This, hey, Sharon's got to go.
Yeah.
What is the, you know, we are not going to tell him right now. What is the best way to get Sharon out of this organization? Because bad news does not get better with time. Okay. Let's clip these losses. Let's get a consultant in. Like, it's the right thing for the company to build around it. But you can't walk in and fire that person. There's got to be some thoughtfulness that goes around with it. But
would you agree with this phrase from my business partner, Matt? He said, firing someone should never come as a surprise to them.
Correct.
Okay.
100%. And that's the conversation, Craig. This is probably a conversation that you either expected or is not coming as a surprise to you. You know, we're having some struggles, right? And they're like, well, what do you mean? Now you can have the conversation in so many different ways, but you can't, if you've not given them warnings, you're not giving them feedback, you're not giving them, that's us, that's our fault as an employer.
Right.
Right. So to me, my first thing is, if it's not working out, like, we instantly start to need a plan around it.
Do you find that people can fake it through one day, you know, or is like eight, you got 10 hours in a day, you're not going to be able to fake your flaws?
I think it's hard. I think you can fake it through one day with one person. I think it's very hard to fake it through one day with a group.
Got it.
And because a group is, you know, different people in the group read you differently. Mm-hmm. And if the group wins, the group's going to support you, I'm good.
Yeah.
If the group's going to support this new candidate to success, I am good, right? And so that candidate may not be the number one candidate I would have hired, but if the group's going to get behind this person and support that person, I need to give the group their strength on that one.
Because the rest of it's the process.
Correct.
Okay, so when you have, like, let's say you have a group of six people, it's an operations thing that comes in and one person's like, they're not like, there's no way I'm working with that person, but they're like, I don't really think that's the right person. Does it have to be 100% consensus?
That is the number one thing that we need to solve, because now you have one person in the group that is not that doesn't have just 100% commitment to support that process. Like, that person needs to either get on board or we cannot hire that person. And I don't say it from a consensus perspective. I just say it because then the good people are not supported by the good system. And there's a break.
Got it.
And then there's going to be animosity. That person's going to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe Sharon hired that guy. He doesn't respect my opinion. Now it's my integrity that's lost. And it's just going to go in circles.
Okay. So communication, massively important across all levels here. One of the last questions I want to ask you about is, how do you measure performance for any position, including all the leaders listening who have to manage their own performance? Yeah. You know, so what do we do to make sure that someone is performing up to expectations, and then how do we give them feedback to course correct?
So here, I'll tell you, we're going through this right now. Yeah. Because we're a new company. We've been live 41 days, and our process, I'll actually walk you through our process, super simple. We have a 90-day goal.
Yeah.
We have four metrics, and we say, here's a 30-day mark, 60-day mark, 90-day mark, right? And we're only doing 90 days out because it's super hard to see the farther than that. So here are our business metrics, 30, 60, 90 days. And then we say business. Here are the four priorities for business, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Here are the four priorities for engineering, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Here are the four priorities for operations, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Now the ops team is like, I need to deliver on these. Craig's delivering on that. Sharon's delivering on that. You know, Jimmy's delivering. If that doesn't get done, we don't hit our top goal. And so lining up each of the team's responsibilities to tie into that top business goal is good, not as a condition for success, but as the right plan. So we also need to let the team know, hey, all the departments may hit their goals, but we may not hit our business goal. That's okay, but we believe that these activities deliver this result. As long as we deliver our activities, that's all we can hold ourselves accountable to.
Wow.
And it's a one pager. Everybody signs up on it. It's super, super simple, right? That way it also forces you not to put 15 things for business and 3 things for engineering. We do 4 things for business, 4 things for engineering, 4 things for ops for the first 30 days. And we only focus on them. That way you get a shiny object opportunity. You're like, hey, this is not part of our strategy. Either we pull something out to put that in, or we don't do it because that's not what we agreed upon, right? I don't think there's any other way.
Right. And then how often do you, hey, we're reviewing these numbers. Are you reviewing some daily with the team, some weekly, or just some on 30 days or whatever?
Yeah,
how often do you course correct?
All our numbers are weekly because I think the daily course correction is really hard. We do a daily huddle.
Yeah.
And the daily huddle is, hey, where are we? And like we report numbers every day.
Yeah.
Our top line numbers, we need these four numbers. Hey, this many users, this much revenue, we report those every day. But if our goal for a day is getting 10 new users, mm-hmm. and we go 2 days without getting any users because we're working on other priorities, we shouldn't beat ourselves up.
Got it.
The goal for the week is 70. On Friday, I have a plan to get that. As long we course correct weekly, and you know, but you have in 90 days, that's not a lot of week. So you're able to course correct fast, but you can't wait 30 days to have a conversation in a fast moving environment.
Got it. My goodness, that was a game changer of an interview. I got so much stuff swirling through my head here. Was there anything you wanted to ask me about?
So the big question I have for you, Craig, is that a lot of I want to kind of get your comments on this, like hire slow, fire fast, right? And when does that apply, and when does it not apply?
Well, I think the fire fast is almost always applying if it's if it's behavior that is just simply not going to be tolerated. You can't let it fester. Sometimes though, you have to like say, am I being too harsh to like, what should I actually fire somebody on this? And then so like, I think it actually goes back to, is it the right person? Mm-hmm. If it's the right person, but the behavior is wrong or the results are wrong, then maybe it's the system and the process is in place. So I certainly have thought about, I don't know if this is working out, but it's not because it's a bad person. It's because maybe it's probably communication down from me that was not working out. So that's, I'm still like, though, if you have somebody who this is just not going to work out, don't go on a second date with them.
Yeah.
Exactly. Don't bother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the approach that I take. I think you've just totally thrown me for a loop on the, hire slow versus hire fast thing. But I've never been in that situation where I needed to hire. What was your peak hiring? 10 agents a month, 20 agents a month.
Yeah, maybe more.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been in that situation. So obviously I'd have to change the game when the game has been changed on me. So,
yeah.
But in the job that I do, I certainly, I mean, I guess, I do own the Fit Body Boot Camps. We do want to always have people in the pipeline. To me, that's actually the most important thing is always be looking, but not necessarily hiring, but always be looking. That's probably the most important thing when you own a gym, because there's the turnover in the industry is higher than most.
Yeah.
And I know I was just talking to a hair salon owner yesterday, and it's the same sort of thing. There's so much turnover. So to me, the most important part of the whole hiring thing is just make sure to cast the widest net. And I was curious as to how you would do that.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more question. So this is one thing that we're thinking a lot about in our growth.
Yeah.
And it is what we are calling internally single points of failure. Mm-hmm. So if for some reason my COO just wants to move to Hawaii, like we are in a whole lot of pain. If for some reason our CTO moves away, like we're in a whole lot of pain. That's a significant single point of failure. Yeah.
Sure.
If it's me, it's okay. I'm the business owner. I get it. Yes, there is natural single points of failure. But my CEO will tell me, hey, there is no single point of failure with you, Sharon. I just got key man insurance on you. Like that's interesting. How do you deal with single points of failure?
Well, I think it goes back to the same thing I was saying about the trainer is you always have to be thinking about what would happen if, you can't just have, I mean, you can only have one COO, but you need to know like what would happen, it's a classic alien abduction, or is, this guy won the lottery tomorrow, he's not coming back, what would you do? Where would you go? You have to build in like these insurance policies. Obviously you're not going to go too in depth on them because that's a waste of your time, but you got to be able to know what would happen if something like catastrophic did happen. So always having the avenues, always having the conversations with the mentors, always keeping the lead flow, the deal flow open, I think is important. Even if you think like, oh, everything's great, we have all the right people, something's going to happen. That's life.
Right.
Makes sense?
Yeah, I think my suggestion is the big thing I'm thinking about a lot right now is where are our single points of failure? And how do I have a backup plan for that? And sharing that with the key folks in those roles. Hey, my CTO, hey, you're a single point of failure. You are an equity stakeholder in this organization.
Yeah.
Both for your sanity and mine, because you care about this company, we can't have the single point of failure. So are the processes dialed in for the team? Do you have a backup consultant company that can come in if something happens? What if I can't find you and you're in Belize for vacation? Like whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And so having those conversations with the single points of failure, I think it's significant transparency into the process.
It's absolutely great. And that just shows like, hey, you care, you're thinking about it. And you really, it's like in a relationship, because this is so much about relationship. You actually probably spend more time with these people than you even do with your family.
Right.
But it's the same sort of thing. If the communication is not between the two of us, it's still going on in each of our own heads.
Right.
You know, you're thinking about what happens if I am gone and I don't want to come back, or, you know, what happens if I do win the lottery, or what happens if, you know, I have to go home and take care of my parents. I have to move, you know, 500 miles away from here. Well, that conversation is going on in your head. And because you're not having it with me, you're filling in the gaps. You're making this narrative. You've made this fictional movie in your head about the converse of what would happen.
Yeah.
And that just turns the molehills into mountains. And the next thing you know, there's a blow up. And that's the same in relationships, right? Oh, well, you know, they didn't say, you know, I love you, good night last night. Something's going on here. and then 3 months later, after you've turned that into some crazy, crazy movie in your head, you have a fight, but it's just, you know, the person just was like, oh, I guess they don't care. The other person's thinking, they don't care if I say that anymore.
Right.
And it's like, oh my goodness. And so that is just, that is friends, love, work, everything.
Right.
You know, sports, you need to have those conversations, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
This was so much fun. Thank you so much, Instagram. I almost ignored you because the conversation with this man was so engrossing, but it was really awesome. Sharon, you are the best, brother.
Thank you, Craig.
All right. So that, like I said, was not what I expected, but it was insanely good. And it was an epic, epic interview. Sharon's story of growing his company 10X, literally 10X, and finding the right team and building the culture and showing you how to excel in your job search. Well, that was absolutely amazing. So Sharon and I would love to hear what you think about today's show and how you plan to overcome the obstacles in your way. Now, also don't forget, Sharon is also an amazing speaker, and you're going to hear from him at the Perfect Life Retreat on November 8th and 9th in San Diego. I want you to grab your 2-for-1 ticket deal at perfectliferetreat.com, and don't miss the bonus networking session with Sharon and myself on the Thursday evening, November 8th. It's going to be a game changer, and we'll see you soon. So until then, keep me posted on your job search and your job hiring, and let me know. Just send me an email at support@earlytorise.com or send me a message on Instagram.com/realcraigvalentine or Twitter, and there my handle is Craig Valentine. All right, thanks for listening to Early to Rise Radio. Head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, rate today's show, share it with your friends, help them get a job and hire superstars, and we'll talk to you soon.